All right, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the bottom of Chav Gimel Medvet. The Mishnah begins, Arusa v'shomeret yavam, lo shotot v'lo notlot k'tuba. When it comes to a relationship between a husband and his wife, in order to have the mesota be effective, you have to be married or fully married. So an arusa, which is only halachic engagement and not nisuin, does not yet qualify. And Shomer Yavam, a woman who is in waiting to perform Yibum with the brother, also does not qualify for the Shtiyat Mesota. So they don't drink. Velo notlot k'tuba. And they don't get their k'tuba, shnemar. Asher tiste isha tachat isha. So because it has to do with a woman doing something deviant under the auspices of her husband. And they are not considered to be marriage or ishut in the full sense, and therefore they're not governed by these rules, and that's why it's prat arusa b'shomeret yavam. Almana the kohen gadol, if she is a widow that's married to a kohen gadol, which is an illegal marriage, grusha v'chalutza the kohen ejot, similarly by a kohen ejot who's not allowed to marry a grusha v'chalutza, mamzeret v'nitina l'Yisrael, a mamzeret or nitina, which is someone from the givonim, who David was gozer alayhem, that they cannot marry into Klal Yisrael, or Bat Yisrael, or Mamzer Lunatin. Or the woman is a Jewish woman trying to marry a Mamzer Lunatin. Lo Shotot, Velo Notlot Ktuba. They don't drink the Mesota, and they're also not entitled to their Ktuba. So the Parsha of Sota is only written in instances, as Rashi says, the Lo Nemra Parsha, Ela Bruya Lekaima. It's only instances where the marriage is a marriage that we want to sustain. The whole point of the Mechikat Hashem is to create Shalom ben Ish l'Ishto, and that they can persist in their marriage. These are marriages that we do not want to persist, and therefore we will not have her drink in order to keep the marriage intact. We'd rather that the marriage unwinds at this point. The only interesting issue is the issue of the Ketubah. So generally, the way it works here with the Mesota is, if it's the woman's fault that she's not drinking the Mesota, then she's not entitled to her ketubah. She's entitled to her ketubah in a normal divorce, or in the case where she's widowed. Over here, she's the cause of the problem because of what transpired with regards to the kinuin stira. And since she can't clarify the situation or fix the situation by having the mesota, she loses out on her ketubah. Over here, what's interesting is that even though normally, in a case of an almanah, the kohen gadol, she would be entitled to her ketubah, even though it's an illicit marriage. And generally, when it comes to illicit marriage, we don't grant a ketubah to the woman because we want her to get divorced. We don't want her to stay in the marriage. Or we want the husband to divorce her and have, there's no financial disincentive for him to divorce her. We learned in the Gemara Ketubot that the penalties are dependent on who we think has the bigger incentive to stay in the marriage. That if the husband has the bigger incentive to stay in the marriage, then we will penalize him. If it is the woman who has the bigger incentive to stay in the marriage, then will penalize her in terms of trying to force or trying to engender a divorce or a separation. So here by the almanah kohen gadol, there was no knas. The woman does not lose her ketubah because she's disincentivized to be in this marriage. The children that she will have from this marriage are chalalim. She becomes a chalala because of this marriage. So she has no incentive to stay in this marriage, and therefore we don't need to put a financial penalty there. Despite that fact, in this case, if she gets herself into a mess, then she does lose her ketubah. And that says, Rashi notes over here, stirata garmala le'asaralav, that she caused the problem by being secluded with this individual and having kinoi and then stira and yichud. That's what caused the problem, and she brought it upon herself. And so her loss of her ketubah is a self-inflicted wound. And that's why she loses out her ketubah, even though normally, in such a marriage, she would not lose her ketubah. Ve'ilo lo shotot, ve'lo notlot ketubah. These are women who, they don't drink, ve'lo notlot ketubah, and therefore they're not going to take their ketubah. Omeret tmeani, if she says that she was guilty, so if she's guilty, there's no reason to drink the mesota anymore, but her admission of guilt is also a loss of her ketubah, because she had an extramarital affair, she's no longer entitled to her ketubah, she's forfeited her ketubah. Ushubala edim, she tmeya. Or if edim come and say that she is tmeya, Truth is that you don't even need two edim. Even one ed would suffice. We learned that at the beginning of the Masechta, that if you're one ed, she's not shota. And because of that, she will also lose out on her tuba. It's obvious if two edim come and testify that she had an extramarital affair, that she's going to not only lose her tuba and not drink the mesota, but then she's at risk of capital punishment now for that behavior. For merit, any shota. Or a woman who refuses to drink. If she demurs and says she's not going to drink the mesota, in the end, we try to encourage her, but if she doesn't do it, then she loses out her ktubah. That's her choice. If she doesn't want to clarify or rectify the situation, she'll have to get divorced, and she's not entitled to her ktubah. Now, here's the next list. Amar bala eni mashke. The husband says, I don't want her to drink. B'shebala bala abaderech. Or the husband did something wrong, which will now make it that the mesota are no longer efficacious, that he had bia with her on the way, which means that he's no longer vinika ish mi'avon. And because of that, the waters are no longer, there's no more reason for her to drink the mesota. Therefore, notlot ktuba velo shotot. In that case, she doesn't drink, but she is entitled to her ktuba. Because the failure to drink or the failure of the mesota here is the husband's fault, not the woman's fault. As far as the woman is concerned, she would drink it and she would be fine drinking it. The husband is the one causing the problem, and therefore she's in the elder to her ktubah. She won't be able to get back together. They'll have to divorce, but she will get her ktubah. Meitu ba'alehen ad shelo shatu. If the husbands pass away before they drink the mesota, bechemai omrim notlot ktubah velo shotot. They can't drink anymore. There's no reason for her to drink because the husband's no longer around. And we said in the past, we're not going to have her drink in order to be matir, the yibum, or for other side issues like that to clarify certain situations. But she also will not lose out her ktubah because her inability to drink now is not caused by her. It's caused by the death of her husband. Either they drink or they don't take their ktubah. In essence, they really want to say the opposite, which is, of course they can't drink because their husbands aren't around. And since they don't drink, they're not getting their ktubah. So the fundamental machloket here is to whether she's entitled to her ktubah or not in the case where the husband passes away. The way that Beit Hillel reads is that she has the option to either drink or not take her ktubah. In truth, what Beit Hillel is saying is, since she cannot drink, she will not get her ktubah. And that's the machloket between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, which is whether she's entitled to her ktubah or not in this instance, because it's really her husband's fault, quote unquote, because he passed away. But on the other hand, she's the one who caused the problem and got herself into this predicament. And the question is, who then takes the blame here, whether she's entitled or not entitled to her ktubah? Actually has to do with the more mechanic issue, is how muchzak the woman is in the ktubah, which we'll deal with in tomorrow's daf. Muberet chavero, umeneket chavero, lo shotot, velo notlot ktubah, divrei Rabbi Meir. When it comes to a woman who is pregnant, or she is nursing, let us say now, according to all the Rishonim, this is true when she's an almanah, when she's a widow, she may not get married because we're worried about the vitality of the fetus or the baby, which is that we're afraid if she gets pregnant now from her new marriage, then her milk supply will dry up. If it dries up, there's no way to feed the baby. So she has to wean the baby before she's allowed to get married to this other individual, which is roughly 24 months. She has to wait before then she can get married again. If this individual married her before the 24 months were up, so he violated the gzirat chachamim or takanat chachamim not to marry a woman who is pregnant or a woman who is nursing in that period of time, then Rabbi Meir says she doesn't drink because it's an illegal marriage and therefore she does not get her ktubah as well. That's Rabbi Meir's position. We saw this with regards to the main sugya of this takana, that their Tosafot over there brings the shita of the Rabbeinu Tam. This even applies to a grusha. Even a divorcee is subject to these rules, and it's not just a din with regards to a widow. In the case of a widow, we don't have the father around to take care of the baby or to ensure the baby gets taken care of, and therefore the new husband is more likely to worry about the new pregnancy and to not consider so much the baby that was born before. It's not his child. So there we worry about it. The Rishonim will believe then in divorce, that's not an issue because the husband is still around. And therefore, there is someone who has a vested interest in ensuring that that baby survives. But the Rabbeinu Tam believes that it's equally applicable both to a case of divorce and a case of death of the husband. Chamim say that that's not necessary over here. In the other cases of illegal marriages, they are permanently illegal, and there's no reason then to have the mesotah or drink the mesotah, because that would sustain a marriage that we don't want. Over here, that's not necessarily true. Because over here, we just need to suspend the marriage, we do not need to terminate the marriage. If they just wait a certain amount of time, then the marriage becomes permissible. So over here, there's not necessarily a reason not to have her drink, because if she does drink and it allows them to continue in their marriage, that's not something that is problematic. They just have to wait. They'll have to separate for a period of time, and then they'll be able to get back together. So this is not something that is permanently problematic. It's only temporarily problematic. Therefore, according to the Chachamim, she does drink, and she will be entitled to her ketubah if she drinks, and there is no problem. So now, that's the sheet of the Chachamim. Again, Rabbi Meir says that the Takanat Chachamim leads us to a position where she won't be shota, even though midoraita, she's technically permitted to drink. But Rabbi Meir says that illegal marriage, midorabanan, says that there's no value in her drinking over here, and therefore we will not have her drink, and she'll lose her ketubah. Ailonit uzkena v'she'ina re'uya leled. Lo not lot ketubah v'lo shotot. In the instance of these three women, if he's married to these women, since the answer of all of this is they are not ruim leled, they're not going to give birth, therefore they don't get their ketubah, and they don't drink. Because again, we don't have a reason to sustain this marriage. This marriage is, we'll call it illegal, because he is commanded in Puria Verivya. And over here, he's not to be Mikayim, Puria Verivya, because he's married to women who will not have children. So because of that, we have no vested interest in sustaining the marriage. We'd rather that the marriage terminates in this instance. These women are Ailonit, as Rashi describes over here. This is a woman who has a congenital problem that does not allow her to give birth, like she's missing her rechem. She's not showing signs of a maturing female. This Kena is a woman who's reached menopause. And Sheina Ruya Leled, Rashi over here says Sheina Ruya Leled, Isheshatat Kosi Karim. That she took some medicine, she drank some potion that caused her now to be barren or unable to reproduce. The other hand, Tosafot says that Sheina Ruya Leled is a different category. Not in this Mishnah, but in another Mishnah, there's actually a fourth woman that's mentioned here who's an Akara. And an Akara is what Rashi is describing in the case of Shatat Kosi Karin, which is someone who drinks something that will then prevent them from possibly reproducing. And the case of Sheina Ruya Leled is marrying a woman at ages or time periods where she won't give birth. The Tosafot quotes, marrying a woman after the age of 40. So even though she hasn't reached menopause yet, the Gemara had a view that if a woman hasn't had a pregnancy before the age of 40, that after the age of 40, she will not become pregnant. If she gets pregnant before that age, then she can continue to have babies after that point. But if she never had a baby prior to the age of 40. So he speaks about here different scenarios or situations in which a woman will no longer give birth. I mean, we saw this also in Yevamot with regards to a woman who is separated from her husband for 10 years. Then also she won't give birth anymore, as long as she didn't have in mind to get married again. That's also something that closes up her possibility of reproducing. The Tosafot here suggests that that's the explanation of Inaru Yaleled, is these types of women that because of the nature of their previous marriages, the time that they waited, the age that they're at, cannot give birth. So therefore they don't get take ketubah and they don't drink because again, we don't want to sustain the marriage. The other way to express the problem here is that the way that the mesotah are termed in the Torah is that if the woman is found innocent, it says v'nikta v'nizra zera, that if she is found innocent, then she will have a pregnancy and she will give birth. Since none of these women are subject to that bracha, then they're not ruin for parshiyat ha-sotah. And that's why they're excluded from the parshiyat ha-sotah, or they don't drink, is because we can't be mekayim with them, v'nikta, v'nizra zara. But as Omer, So this is David's question. Rabbi Lezer Omer, Yachol Ho, Lisai Shacheret, Belifrot, Velarabote Mena. He can marry another woman and be Mikayim Pri Rivio with the other woman. And because of that, there's no reason to say that this marriage should not be sustained. He could sustain this marriage in a legal manner, and it would be fine if he marries another woman to be Mikayim Pri Rivio. So there's no reason to force a termination of this marriage, when the solution might be not to terminate this marriage, but just have him enter into another marriage. Now, why the Chachamim over here have a difference of opinion? Before, by the case of Meneket Chaviro and Meuberet Chaviro, there the Chachamim said, okay, just suspend the marriage for a period of time. And since it's legal in the long run, then we're going to allow her to drink because we will sustain the marriage. Over here, the Chachamim believe that we do not want to sustain the marriage, even though there is a solution to the problem. Question is why? Why do we differentiate in those cases? So there are different ways to distinguish. One way is to say that one's a din d'oraita and one's a din d'rabbanan. Meneket chaviro is just a takanat chachamim. Whereas here, getting married to a woman that you cannot procreate with is an isra sei in a Torah, which is not mikayim, the mitzvah prior rivya. That's one reason that the chachamim might differentiate their opinion. Another reason is because the nature of the solution to the problem. In the case of Meneket Chaviro or Muberet Chaviro, all he has to do is wait. It's a passive solution to the problem. It's just the passage of time that allows her to become legal. Over here, he has to marry actively another woman in order to make the first marriage legal. So we're not going to rely on the fact that he's actually going to enter into another marriage in order to solve the problem of the previous marriage. So over here, that's why the Chachamim lean, in this case, to say that she cannot drink, and we do not sustain this marriage. Whereas by the case of Meneket Chaviro, Meret Chaviro, they do say that she could drink, just wait the requisite amount of time, and then it would be fine. So that's why they would distinguish in these situations. Right, the nature of your question is really Kena. So they've reached an age where she's hit menopause, and now she's not going to give birth anymore, so there's no din of sotah. I don't think that's what the Mishnah here is talking about, a first marriage. Someone who marries for the first time as Kena, and has not been Mikayim Pri Rivya. A person's already been Mekayim Pri Rivya. I don't think that these issues are applicable because you're right. They want to sustain a marriage, but they already were Mekayim Pri Rivya, so it's not a legal marriage anymore. Alright, Fashar Kol Anashim, any other woman, O Shotot, O Lo Not Lot Ktuba. So then anybody else, the situation is either they drink or they don't get their Ktuba. As Tosva points over here, Tema Mishnah Yatera, My Kamashmalan, Hashmainan Le Meresha. What does this line here add that we don't know already from the rest of the Mishnah, which is that when a woman can't drink, she loses her ketubah, or she drinks, meaning that those are the options that were laid out until now. What is the extra line over here adding for us? He says, "V'omerabi davka meuberet enu shota mishum deika sakanat defashot." It's only a case of meuberet. Aval nisei petoch gimel chadashim. There's another takanat chachamim that you may not marry within 3 months of a previous marriage. That's so that we can discern between babies that are born from the first marriage or the second marriage. If you violate that, tulo kansinin lelotzi. We don't force him to be divorcer if he already violated that isur. Kinin by ishto aruyalo. And then it's called ishto aruyalo. So here you have a situation. What Tosafot says is that we can find a situation in which there's a takanat chachamim that would say that you're not supposed to be married. And that would make it a non-sustainable, quote unquote, marriage. Nevertheless, we don't force them to separate in this case. As opposed to the case of Meneket Chaviro, Umuberet Chaviro, where we say it's an illegal marriage that can be solved by the suspension of the marriage over time, and we force them to suspend the marriage until the weaning of the baby. Over here, there's an illegal marriage if you marry within 3 months. But if you do that, and you violate the Takanat Chachamim, we don't force you to suspend the marriage. You shouldn't have done it. But once you've done it, we leave it in place, and therefore this woman would drink the Meis Sotah. The Divrei Yaakov, she would drink the Mei Sotah. If she doesn't drink the Mei Sotah, she would lose out on her ketubah. That's what Tosafot says, the Mishnah Yetera, this extra line here of Oshotot, Olonot Ketubatan, is coming to help us with. Eshet Kohen Shota, Umuteret the Bala. The wife of a Kohen drinks, and then she's Muteret to her husband afterwards, which is, I'm going to say, Pshita. Of course, she should be able to drink and then be Muteret the Bala, because the drinking proves her innocence. What some of the achronim suggest over here is that the problem would be that the mayim only works if she did it intentionally, meaning if she was a willing participant. If she was raped, the Mesota will not provide any evidence of the fact that she was raped. By Israel, that means that it's not meaningful, because if she was raped, she's still allowed to be with her husband. And again, it's not her fault. But in the case of a Kohen, if the problem was that she was raped, then that it makes her asura to return to her husband. If that's the case, then the Mesota may not clarify the situation. So you could have thought, the Avamina is, that she drinks the Mesota and they prove her innocent. All it shows you is that she wasn't a willing participant. Doesn't show you that she didn't have biyah. And if she had biyah, then it would be problematic. So here the Mishnah says that it's fine, that we don't worry about that. And she drinks, and she's muter de bala. Eshet saris shota. A wife of a saris. A saris is a man who cannot reproduce. She drinks. Now, the way that Rashi explains it over here is eshet saris is kron she nistares lachar she nasa. That this all happened after they got married, the kadmash chivat bal boel, and that they had a legal marriage first, and then the problem came along the way where he then became a saris in the marriage. So when they got married, it wasn't an issue. He was a saris, wasn't a saris at the time they got married, and therefore he has biyah with his wife first, and then afterwards this problem arose. There was an issue that came up in the marriage. So then she's still eshet saris shota. She still drinks at that point because the marriage was entered into legally. And on top of that, there's no reason now to force a divorce, because the mitzvah of pure rivya is incumbent upon the man and not on the woman. And so for the woman to stay in this marriage is not problematic. And so therefore it's a sustainable marriage. And since it's a sustainable marriage, we allow her to drink. Now once again here, there is a deficit of v'nikta v'nizra zara with regards to eshet saris. Nevertheless, it's not her fault in this instance. And so maybe because it's not her fault, we're not going to penalize her for that. And that's why she doesn't lose her ketubah in this case. Alright. Ayidei kol arayot mikanim chutz min hakatan. The husband can warn his wife not to seclude with anyone who is arayot. Arayot means includes family members as well. She can say about her father, about her brother. Doesn't matter who it is, he can be mikaneh and say don't seclude with these individuals. No, it's not that he's making a generic statement that you cannot be secluded with any. He has to specify. But if he specifies father, brother, those are the people, then it's a kinoi. That's considered to be a kinoi. Then we'll be subject to all the rules or procedures of a sota. You might have thought that arayot like that are not included under this rubric of sota. What the Mishnah is telling you is that anyone who she's not supposed to be with, whether that's because she's a married woman, she's not supposed to be with, but even her father, brother, people like that, where ichud is not a problem, he's allowed to be mikanela and tell her not to. God. Even though technically the nim ichud is not an issue, he's saying that I don't want you secluding with them anymore. So chutz min hakatan, with the exception of a minor, who he doesn't have the right to do that with. Mi she'eino ish, or someone who's not a man. I mean that she can't warn her for being together with a woman or maybe a behema. Here are women where Beitin steps in on behalf of the husband to warn the woman not to seclude with these individuals. If her husband became a cheresh, so that's that he's unable to speak here now, so he can't articulate, he can't give the kinoi, so Beitin will step in for him. Oh, nishtate, or he's not of sound mind anymore. He lost his mind, he's gone insane. Or he's incarcerated, he's in jail. So in all these instances, the husband can't act to, quote-unquote, protect his interests. So Beit Din steps in to prevent the woman from acting in this manner and warns her not to seclude with these individuals if there seems to be a problem. Obviously, they can't do this to force her then to drink the mesota, because Beit Din's not empowered to make the woman drink the mesota. It's only the husband who can warn and then bring her to drink the mesota. So that's not going to happen here. Ela leposta miktubata. The reason Beit Din steps in over here is to tell her, if you continue to act this way or you violate this kinoi, you're going to lose your ktubah, because you're not going to be able to drink the mesota. And if you violate this, then you're going to end up losing your ktubah. So we're giving her a financial disincentive from continuing this behavior. Biosi Omer, af leshashkota klishietzei bala mi beit asirim yishkena. That it's okay if Beit Din does this. When the husband is freed from his incarceration, he can then take the woman to drink. So there is a value in the kinoi of the Beit Din, even though the Beit Din itself can't take her to drink, because then the husband later on could step in and take her to drink. And the same would be true in the other cases of nitcharesh or nishtateh, if he became healthy again, he became sane again, or he's able to then speak, that maybe at that point he would take his wife up to drink. And so there is a value, aside from the losing of the ketubah, of this kinui of beitin. Alright, so Gemara says, mishtahu de lo shatya, ha kinui mikani lo. From our Mishnah, the beginning of the Mishnah says, arusa and shomeret yavam lo shotot. They don't drink, velo not lot ketubah, but they also don't get their ketubah. So it sounds like from the Mishnah, this is the deal that the Gemara is making, is those women do not drink the mei sotah, but the husband, whether that's the arus or the yavam, is allowed to be mekana them, is allowed to warn them not to seclude. Menahani mile. How do we know that he has a right to do that, even though it won't result in her having to drink the mei sotah? The Tan Rabbanan, daber el bnei Yisrael v'amartalim, this beginning of the parshia of sotah. And so as Rashi says over here, we learn it out from the Amarta Ribuyehu. The Amarta is a Ribuy. And because of that Ribuy, there are both Arusav Shomeret Yavam Lekinui. That includes the Shomeret Yavam and the Arus, who are the Arusah, who you can't have Kinui with. They can't drink because they don't have, as the Mishnah says, they're not Tachat Isha. They're not under the auspices of a husband. So they don't drink the Mesotah. But on the other hand, they are still relevant to the parshia of kinui. And so now there'll be women who you can have kinui with, but since they can't drink, they'll lose their ketubah if they violate the kinui. And so the husband is entitled, or the avam is entitled to be mekanela. And if he is mekanela, then they will lose their ketubah if they violate that kinui, because obviously they can't drink the mei sotah. As Rashi notes in the Mishnah, the reason that, for instance, the Shomeret Yavam loses her ketubah over here, even if they can't drink, is because the brother can say, I don't want to marry this woman. We're not going to compel him to engage with a woman and have yibum with a woman whose behavior is questionable or problematic. So this woman caused the problem in the situation, and that's why she's going to lose out. As the Rashi says over here, she garma lesor atzma alav. She caused the problem over here. She nistarach harei kinui. She secluded herself after he warned her not to do this. And now she can't drink. It is a technical problem why she can't drink, because she's not relevant to the parsha of sotah. But even though it's not her fault that she can't drink, it is her fault that she's in this predicament. And since it's her fault that she's in this predicament, then we don't grant her the ketubah. She loses out her ketubah in this case. And again, we're not going to compel these parties to go through with the marriage if this is a woman who's got really questionable behavior. As Rashi says over here, I feel late line to Rav Amnuna, the Shomeret Yavam Shizintam Muteret Yavma. If we don't hold like Rav Amnuna, who we saw earlier, says that a Shomeret Yavam who has an illicit relationship is asur to be a yibum, so we don't hold like him. It's Muter. Nevertheless, Nehidu Muteret, miolo by the Minsa Visha Zona. Even if it's Muteret, this guy may not want to marry this promiscuous woman. He has no interest in this. He was doing it for the mitzvah of Yibum, but now if this woman's behavior is like this, he has no interest in marrying her. Yerushalmi actually learns this out of the Kinei Tishto, Afilo Mitzah Tishto. So Tosafot on the Amud Bet brings that limud from the Yerushalmi, that's how the Yerushalmi gets to the fact that there can be kinui, even though they're not considered to be full-fledged wives. And now the Gemara says, Umatnitan Mani. Who is the author of our Mishnah? Rabbi Yonatan, it must be Rabbi Yonatan. And this is the question of regards to the Shomeret Yavam and the Arusa, that both of them do not drink or are excluded from the Parshia of Sotah. So here we have a Machloket Tanaim from the Brayta, Tatanya. Tachat Isheich, Prat La Arusa. It says, Tachat Isheich, under the auspices of your husband, she had this behavior, this happened. Then Prat La Arusa, the exclusive Arusa, who's not Tachat Isheich. Yocho Shani Motzi Af Shomeret Yavam. I would think that a Shomeret Yavam is also excluded from the Parshia of Sotah. Tomalomar Ish Ish. Ish Ish is a Riboy, Divrei Rabbi Yoshaya. So according to Rabbi Yoshaya, an Arusa is excluded from the Parshia of Sotah, like our Mishnah. But a Shomeret Yavam is included in the Parshia of Sotah, which the Gemara explained why in a minute, why he thinks this way. But he has that from the Riboy of Ish Ish. So obviously, Rabbi Yoshaya is not the author of our Mishnah, because our Mishnah says both Arusa and Shomeret Yavam are excluded from the Parshia of Sotah, whereas Rabbi Yoshaya believes that it's true by Arusa, but not true by a Shomeret Yavam. Rabbi Yonatan Omer, Tachad Isheich, Prat L'Shomeret Yavam. Tachari Sheikh, when you're under the auspices of a husband, that comes to exclude Shomer Yavam, who's not in that position. Otsi Shomer Yavam, lo Otsi et Arusa. I would have thought to exclude a Shomer Yavam, but an Arusa would be included in the Parsha. Talmud Omar, Asher Tiste Isha Tachat Isha. So we have another pasuk that says that she had deviant behavior while she was under the auspices of her husband. So again, auspices of her husband, that's a second limud. Prat la arusa. That excludes an arusa. So Rabbi Yonatan says that both an arusa and a shomeret yavam are excluded from the parshia of sota. Not only that, but he also uses the same pasuk that the Mishnah uses to exclude at least an arusa. And therefore Rabbi Yonatan would be, assume would be the author of the position that our Mishnah is taking up. What's the explanation of this machlok between Rabbi Hoshaya and Rabbi Yonatan? They both start differently. Rabbi Hoshaya says that it's much more obvious that an Arusa is excluded from the Parshiyah of Sota. It's easier to explain why the Arusa is left out. Shomer Yavam would not have been the first one that we would have excluded. And in the end, Rabbi Hoshaya actually includes a Shomer Yavam and said she is in the Parsha. Whereas for Rabbi Yonatan, it's just the opposite. He says it's much more obvious that a Shomer Yavam is out of the Parsha. I would have possibly thought Arusa is included, then I have another meal to take out the Arusa. So why is it that, according to Rabbi Yonatan, it's much more obvious that a Shomer Yavam does not belong in the Parsha? Whereas for Rabbi Hoshaya, it's much more obvious that an Arusa does not belong in the Parsha. They each have a deficit. That deficit is what they're emphasizing, and that's what the Gemara explains here. Mara Limale Arusa. One of them thinks the Arusa is a better position. The Kedushay Didei. Misoklim Al Yado. It makes more sense to say that the Arusa would be included in the Parshia because, number one, it's his Kiddushim. He engaged this woman. He has the Erusin with this woman. And number two is, if she violates their Erusin and has an extramarital affair, she's subject to Skila. That's a Nara Hamurasa. And so she's punished by a death penalty if she violates that Erusin. So that makes it much more likely that the Arusa is to be included in the Parshia of Sota. And that's why Rabbi Yonatan says, Shomer Yavam is out for sure. Arusa, I'm not sure. And then I have another miut that says Arusa is out as well. But my first inkling would have been that a Shomer Yavam is not included in the Parsha because a Shomer Yavam is missing both of these. The marriage is not engendered by him himself, but rather by his brother. And number two is, if she violates being a Shomer Yavam and has an affair during that period of time, it's only an Iser Lav, it's not subject to the death penalty. On the other hand, Mar, Alimalei Shomer Yavam, Tolo Michsura Misira L'chupa. On the other hand, Rabbi Hoshaya's position is that it makes a lot more sense to include, to have a Shomer Yavam be subject to the Parsha of Sota than Arusa, because an Arusa is still missing the completion of the marriage, which is Misira L'chupa. They have Kiddushin, but they don't have Nisuin and Chupa. That's missing over here, and therefore she's less like a married woman. On the other hand, Shomer Yavam is not missing anything. She doesn't need a Chupa. She doesn't need Nisuin. All she needs is Bia. So if she has Bia, then that marriage is consummated to the Yavam. So she is much closer to being a wife to this individual, or being deemed a wife, because there's very little that sits between here and her being this wife. All you have to have is Bia, and it's done. Whereas for the Arusa, you have to have not only Bia, but you have to have Nisuin or Chupa, or if Bia is Chupa, but you have to take some active measure in order to consummate that marriage. So based on that, Rabbi Hoshaya believes that it's more likely that in the Parshiyah of Sota, that the Shomer Yavam is included, and the Arusa is excluded, and she doesn't belong in that Parsha. For Rabbi Yonatan, hi ish ish my abdilei. What does he do with the riboy that Rabbi Hoshaya uses, ish ish? Mi baile the rabot, eshet cheresh, veshet shota, veshet shamum. So it comes to include all of these individuals that beitin is mekaneh on behalf of the baal. So this, again, the two that are mentioned in our Mishnah, the eshet cheresh and eshet shota, both of those are mentioned in our Mishnah. Eshet shamum is an additional party that's added here, as Rashi says over here, is lakoy bitumhon lev. This is someone who is not necessarily insane like the shoteh, but he's incapacitated somehow mentally, and he's unable to do the kinyan for his wife. Beit Din again will step in this instance. Tosafot here raises an issue, and it's something that Tosafot discusses in many places in Shas. It's not really integral to our sugya, but he notes that Rabbi Yonatan and other places in Shas says that when the Torah uses a double lashon, it's divra Torah k'lashon b'nei adam. That is a literary style of the Torah, and you can't make anything of it. You can't say that it's there for a drasha, because it's just a natural expression of the Torah. And therefore, Tosafot says over here, what is this question of ish for Rabbi Yonatan? What does he do with it? He doesn't need to do anything with it because he doesn't believe that that is subject to a drasha. He thinks that's lashon b'nei adam. That's the normal way that the Torah expresses something of this nature. What Tosafot goes on to do is show that this is not unique to Rabbi Yonatan, but many of the Tanaim, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon, in different places in Shas, sometimes have opinion that the double lashon is dibra torah lashon b'nei adam, and in other places in Shas, they are doresh a double lashon. And so Tosafot says that we don't find anybody, maybe except for Rabbi Yishmael, who's completely consistent in saying that dibra torah lashon b'nei adam. And so then, what's the meaning of dibra torah lashon b'nei adam, if in some places you say there is a drasha, in other places you say there is no drasha? So Tosafot concludes from that, Nira demand the svirle damar dibra torah lashon b'nei adam. Those people that hold this concept, mode chohecha deika lemidrash tashtinenle. If there is a possibility we doresh it, that would be our first choice. If we don't find a drasha that naturally fits, then we say dibra torah kelashon b'nei adam. But if that's the case, then what's the machloket here in any of these situations between someone who says dibra torah kelashon b'nei adam or not? Because even the one who says that the Torah writes this, or that's the literary style of the Torah, they still believe that you are doresh the words when you have a chance to be doresh. So then what's the significance of that position? And Tosafot says that, man de'idle dibra torah k'shalim b'nei adam, ein lo koach lotzi yitur lashon mimashma'ut. That he can only make a drasha that is relevant to the meaning or context in which this is found. Vim eino inyan legufo. Ella came in the matzina memory dibra torah k'shalim b'nei adam, lo notzio mimashmuto. We don't assume that the double lashon is an extra extraneous word that we can use then for any type of drasha. The only drasha that we can use is if there is a drasha or a halacha that is specifically relevant to this case and would make sense in the context of that word or that double lashon that's being used. So in cases where that is true, then they are doresh tekra. But if that's not the case, then they're not doresh tekra. And that would be the nafkamina between whether you say dibra torah lashon b'nei adam or not. If you believe dibra torah lashon b'nei adam, that means that this is the style of the Torah. It's available for a drasha because it is a double lashon. But nevertheless, it's only a drasha that doesn't take it away from the pashtut or mashma'ut of the kra. On the other hand, if you believe lo dibra torah lashon b'nei adam, that word becomes completely extraneous. And that makes it available for a drasha, whether the drasha is in context or with the mashma'ut of the psukim there, or even a drasha that is completely different or less related to that which is stated there. And that's what Tosafot says, that kevan shelo shina kra b'dibure, since it's not a real change in style, im tein dibra torah k'lashon b'nei adam, v'lav kara yiteruhu, the midrash minei. So therefore, since it's not an extraneous pasuk, you can't just be doresh anything you want from it. You can only be doresh things that are very tightly connected to where the words are found in the pasuk. And that's how Tosafot tries to reconcile what seemingly are contradictory opinions amongst many of the Tanaim, including Rabbi Yonatan here, who say that dibra torah k'lashon b'nei adam, and in instances, or many instances, they are doresh when you have a double lashon. Rabbi Yoshaya, hai tachadisha, maya avdilei. What does Rabbi Yoshaya do with the tachadisha, which is the second miut that Rabbi Yonatan brings? So, ha mi bayile la hakish ish li isha, visha li ish. Comes to make a hekesh between the man and the woman and the man. This is a drusha that we're going to, adav chavzayin, which says that a woman or a man are excluded from the parshiyah of sota if they have certain physical impediments. Because the parshiyah is written in a certain way that makes it that they have to be able to talk, they have to be able to walk, they have to be able to bring, and if they're unable to do those physical items, then they're not subject to parshiyah of sota. Generally, it applies to one of the two. It's the man or the woman, depending on how the parsha is written. If it applies to the man, then we say it equally applies to the woman, or it applies to the woman, it equally applies to the man. And that comes out of this, isha tachad isha, to tell you that the woman and the man have the same din, because in the same pasuk, you say the woman, tachad isha, but the bapikei is ishela, her husband, so we have a hekesh then between ish and isha, to tell you that they have the same din. If a physical impediment would make it that they don't fit into the parsha because of the man, it would be the same true if that woman has that impediment, and the same way, other way around, vice versa. Ella, taima dichtiv hani krai. It's only because we have these psukim. Have love hachi. Had it not been for these psukim, havamina arusa shatya, that the arusa would drink. Both Rabbi Shaya and Rabbi Yonatan say that the arusa is excluded because we have a limud from the pasuk to exclude her. Had it not been for the limud from the pasuk, the assumption would have been arusa is included in the parsha of Sukta, where it says, v'ha kiata ravacha bar chanina midaroma, when he came up from the south, ata v'aita matinita biyadei. He brought a braita, and the limud in the braita was, mi baladei ishech, that the claim of the husband here is that this woman had an extramarital affair, and then when the coin's describing to her what's going to happen, is that the meisulta will affect her because she had a relationship, mi baladei ishech, outside of your relationship with your husband. From here we learn, shemikadmash chivat baal boel. It has to be an instance in where the husband's relationship with the woman preceded the extramarital affair. Not in a case where her first biyah is in this illegal marriage. So that would cause a problem for an arusa. In the case of an arusa, they just have kiddushin, and they have yet to consummate the marriage. It means that the husband hasn't had biyah with this woman. The woman then goes and has an extramarital affair. The shchivat boel is the first shchivat. That's the first biyah that she's having, is with the boel and not with the baal. So the Gemara says here, your default position is that arusa is included in the parshiyah of Sota, but I have these psukim that exclude her. But why would have the default been that she's included in the parsha? She doesn't make the qualifications of what a Sota is, which is a case where the husband has biyah first, and then the boel has biyah with her. Why that's a necessity, or why that's the case, mostly has to do with the idea of mi'ilah, that a woman's illicit relationship is a mo'el of the husband. She is doing something that, in a sense, is a merid, a rebellion against her husband. And that's more acute in the case where the husband's already consummated the marriage with this woman. So because it's more acute in that case, therefore, we would only bring her to the mei sota, or the issue of sota, if she was had shchivat ha-baal. But if it was no shchivat ha-baal, then it's less of a mi'ilah in that case. Which is interesting because the way the Torah stipulates the punishments, a nara murasa is subject to skila in the case of an extramarital affair, whereas a married woman is only subject to chenek as the punishment. Skila is a higher form of punishment than chenek, which would indicate that the nara murasa, who has an illicit relationship or extramarital affair, or even if she's raped, then the party that raped her is subject to a much higher penalty, which seems that the mi'ilah there is worse in the case of a nara murasa. So that's interesting, just in of itself, that the Torah seems to indicate through the punishment for extramarital affair that a nara murasa is more problematic, whereas here we're saying that the parshiyah sota is more applicable to someone who already had biyah with the husband than with someone who did not have a biyah with the husband. It's just interesting dynamic. Though the answer to that question might lie in the fact that the purpose of the mei sota is to generate shalom ben ish l'ishto. And that's really only relevant when there is an existing relationship and there is, as the Gemara describes in other places, that biyah or chibata biyah is what generates that special relationship or unique relationship between the husband and wife. And that's what's trying to be preserved by the mei sota. So that even though maybe objectively the begida by an arusa is greater, it's still not subject to the parshiyah of sota, because there we're not trying to then repair an existing relationship. It's still a relationship in its infancy, which really hasn't gone off the ground, and that's not what the mei sota are designed for. So Amarami bar chama mishkachala kagon shebale arus bebeit aviyah. It's a case where she had biyah with her arus in her father's house, I mean before they married. Here, the Rishonim prove, the Ravid and the Meiri proved that the Rambam, who says that if the husband ever had an illegal biyah, then the Meisota don't work. From this, they prove that that's not the case. Because you see here that the Gemara is entertaining a possibility that he slept with his wife, quote-unquote, in her father's house while they only had Kiddushin before they had Nisuin, which is an illegal biyah. And despite the fact that they had an illegal biyah, there's still the Meisota are going to work. That's the assumption of the Gemara here. That this is a way you can have Shechivat HaBaal before Shechivat HaBoel. And therefore, the parsha of Sota would have worked had it not been for the fact that we have a miyut that excludes Arusa. But you see here that this illegal biyah is not problematic. Other achronim, in defense of the Rambam, say that you could have a situation in which this biyah is not illegal. It could be a case of shogeg. He didn't intentionally have biyah with her. It happened by accident, for whatever the circumstance is. Or it could be a situation in which he was mikadesh bebiyah. He did the Kiddushin through Biyah. And then he would have Shechivat HaBaal bifnei the Boel. It's not so simple because Rav is mindgud. Rav gave Malkot to anybody who was Mekadesh b'Biyah. And over there, the Rishonim discussed, but it seems like he was Mafkia, you're right, to have Kiddushin through Biyah. Not only is he Mangid that he gave Malkot, but it seems like they closed that avenue for Kiddushin. But there are other ways to come up with a case where the husband has Biyah with this woman, and it would not be considered to be illegal, and that would then still support this position of the Rambam, that as long as you've had any illegal behavior in Arayot for the man, then the Meisotah don't work. Other Rishonim, like the Rebbe, believe that it's only after he does Kinoi Vistira, then the husband has to have a clean slate in order for it to work then. It's not so simple. If you look at the Ramban ala Torah and the Rambam himself, both of them think that the Meisotah, as we said before, are this miraculous waters that implicate the woman if she's done something wrong. The husband has to have a clean slate, period. Because how can the husband ask for Hashem to perform a miracle to say that his wife here acted inappropriately and therefore she should be incriminated if this guy himself doesn't act appropriately? And how can he make that request? Or I can have a nace, a miracle happen for him if that was the case. So there's a lot of reason to believe that the Rambam and the Ramban of the Torah are right. But here again, this Gemara leans against that position because here they possibly had an illicit relationship beforehand, and yet the Meisota works still. So now the Gemara says, "Dekavata gabi shomeret yavam." So what's the case of the shomeret yavam? Again, by the shomeret yavam, you need shchivat ha-baal before the boel. The baal is the new husband, is the brother. He has to have biyah before the boel has biyah. So now, what's the case? Kigon shebaale yavam bebeit chamia. He had biyah with her prior to taking her as his wife. Ha shomeret yavam karitla. She's no longer a shomeret yavam then. She becomes a full-fledged wife. As we just said before, the only thing separating between the consummation of this yibum and this woman being a shomeret yavam is bia. And bia doesn't matter whether the bia is done intentionally, unintentionally, bemezid, beratzon, anything. Any type of bia consummates the yibum. And therefore over here, if he has bia with her in order to qualify that the shchivat ha-baal was before the boel, she's no longer a shomeret yavam. So then she's his wife. So then how do you come up with a scenario where the shechivat ha-baal will be before the shechivat ha-boel, and yet she's still called a shomeret yavam? What's the scenario? Dama Rav. So in a case where they have biyah, Rav says, kana lakol, she becomes a full-fledged wife. Whereas Shmuel says, rak for the things that are in the parsha. And that's what the Gemara says here, kishmuel. It's like Shmuel, Damar lo kanala, devarim amurim beparsha. That when you have bi'ah, which automatically closes the situation and makes it that he's now miyabim, the woman, according to Rav, if he has bi'ah, that's a full-fledged yibum, and she becomes a full-fledged wife to him. Shmuel says that she doesn't become a full-fledged wife. She just gets those items that are listed in the parsha. The items in the parsha are, number one, that he gets the inheritance of his brother. He gets the possessions of his brother. And number two that's written in the parsha is that he no longer needs chalitza, she needs a get to get divorced. So those two things are true according to Shmuel, but otherwise she still remains a shomeret yavam and he has to properly consummate the marriage or the yibum over here. So what the Gemara says is, according to Rav, okay, you can't come up with a case of shomeret yavam. According to Shmuel, lukana ela dvarim amurim b'parsha, it only makes her into a full-fledged yavam for these particular items. But otherwise, she's still a shomeret yavam until he marries her properly or takes her in properly. Where it says, Iochi, if that's the case, Lema Rav, Damar Kirabo Shaya, Vishmol Amar Kirabi Yonatan. Let's suggest now that this machloket amoraim between Rav and Shmuel is actually paralleled or mirrored by the machloket tanaim, Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yonatan. Because according to Rav, you never have a case of shomeret yavam, basically. In the case of shomeret yavam, either you don't have shechivat abal before shechivat aboel, and so therefore there'll be no mei sota, or if he has biyah, which then qualifies her for the parshiyah of sota, she's already his full-fledged wife. Rabbi Hoshaya in the Braita told us, Shomeret Yavam is included in the Parshiyah of Sotah. Well, why is she included in the Parshiyah of Sotah? Because she's not going to be a Shomeret Yavam anymore. She's always going to be a full-fledged wife. And that's why Rav is like Rabbi Hoshaya. Ushmol damar Rabbi Yonatan. And Shmuel is going to hold like Rabbi Yonatan, which is Shmuel says that you can have a case of Shomeret Yavam. And just like Arusa is excluded from the Parshiyah of Sotah, so too a Shomeret Yavam is excluded from the Parshiyah of Sotah. I can even fit into the position of Rabbi Yonatan. The fact that you have a pasuk that says that she is nitmaet, the reason you need a pasuk is because she is a full-fledged wife. Meaning that if she wasn't a full-fledged wife, why do you need a pasuk to exclude her from the parshia? The mere fact that she's not a full-fledged wife would then exclude her from the parsha. Why do I need a miut? A miut is that despite the fact that she's a full-fledged wife, she then is excluded from the parsha. Ushmuel amar, Shmuel can say, ana amre afilu Rabbi Hoshaya. I can even hold like Rabbi Hoshaya. To be istichra l'ribuye. Since you need a pasuk to include a shomeret yavam, michlal galav lishtohi klal. That shows you that she must not be his wife. You need a pasuk to include her, because she's not automatically included. Had she been a full-fledged wife, she would have automatically been included in the parshiyah. The fact that you need a pasuk to include her shows you that her status without that pasuk is not a full-fledged wife. Now, as Rashi notes over here, you then run into a problem with the drashul over here, which is, Anamrei, when Rav says, I can even hold like Rabbi Yonatan, v'choshkein the Rabbi Hoshaya, and of course I can fit into Rabbi Hoshaya, v'hadi itztich the Rabbi Hoshaya the Rebuye mi ishish. According to this, why does Rabbi Hoshaya have to include her from Ishish? Lav dafka, el esmachta ba'alma. According to Rav, a Yavama is a full-fledged wife. If she's a full-fledged wife, she automatically, or by default, is included in the Parshia of Sotah. So then why do Rabbi Hoshaya need Ishish the Rabot Shomeret Yavam? That would have happened anyway. You don't need a pasuk to include it. But Rashi says this, and Tosafot seconds this opinion, is that the ish is just an esmachta bi'alma. The shomer yavam is included because she is a full-fledged isha. So now Rabbi Yoshaya's ish is just an esmachta to say that she's included. Rabbi Yonatan, who wants to exclude her, needs a pasuk to exclude her, because otherwise she would have been a full-fledged wife. Same is true, you can see that in the Rashi about Shmuel and Rabbi Yoshaya, that according to Shmuel, if she's not a full-fledged wife, then why do you need a pasuk to exclude her? Meaning, why does Rabbi Yonatan need a pasuk to exclude a shomeret yavam? If by definition, she's not his wife. If she's not his wife, she's not in the parsha of Sotah. So again, Rashi says over here, the fact that Rabbi Yonatan needs a pasuk to say the shomeret yavam is excluded, that's an esmachta ba'alma. V'lav dekrola hochiata. You don't need a pasuk for that. Ela lakish isha le'ish k'dishani del. We use it for the purpose that we said before, which is have the hekesh between isha and ish, with regards to these physical impediments, and we'll use it the way that Rabbi Hoshaya uses, that Rabbi Yonatan will also use it, because he doesn't need it for a miut anymore. The Shomeret Yavam is not a wife. She's not a wife, she's not included in the Parshiyah. So the way Rashi solves that problem in the end of Rav and Shmuel's opinions, with regards to including themselves in both Tanaim's positions, they say that the reason that the Tanaim over here had to come up with a miut, or a riboy, is an asmachta bi'alma, because according to the way Rav or Shmuel learn, their positions themselves cause it that the Shomeret Yavam would be included or excluded from the parshia of Sotah. Though Tosafot does not like necessarily this explanation of Rashi here, that it's just an asmachta bi'alma, because he says, Tema, he dalav ishtohi, ilav mi'atate kro, mehechi teiti, dbina nishto tfei, linyan ashka, linyan kinui. He says that you still need the miyot over here, you still need the limud, to teach you that there's a distinction between kinoi and shtia. Even though she's not his wife, which would make it obvious that she doesn't drink the mei sota, nevertheless, there's still a value in telling us that miyut, because it comes to tell you that that's only by shtia, not by kinoi. By putting the miut there, it tells you that this idea that she's not a wife is that she's not a wife enough to drink, but she is a wife enough to have kinoi. There, Tosafot says that in that scenario, it's not just an esmachta, there is a value in this limud for Shmuel. Okay, we're going to stop here, 3 lines down on the top of Chafhei Amud Aleph.